when he watches practice, we'll go up and down one or two times, and he'll stop it and talk about the 10 things he saw. While I'm looking, seeing two teaching points, he sees 10, and he specifically mentions each of them. His attention to detail is extraordinary.
Welcome to 94 and More, presented by Bristol Studio. While a basketball court might be 94 feet, we believe it's limiting to solely look at this beautiful game as a sport. In our minds, it's closer to an art form, even a tool through which we can study the world and learn about ourselves. I'm your host, Jake Fenster, and on this podcast, we will explore the game of basketball, not only as a sport, but as a dynamic force that influences culture, builds bridges, and has the ability to shape our national conversation. Hope you enjoy. As always, feel free to reach out to us at 94@bristol-studio.com and follow us on Instagram at Bristol Studio and at 94 and More Podcast. All right, let's get into the show. Today, I'm here with Vic Law. Vic, how's everything going in Australia?
Man, it's great, man. It's another good sunny day. Blessing to be on the podcast again.
Real quick, you've been on kind of a scoring tear and a winning tear these last few games. What's going on? You doing anything different?
Oh, man. I just got Carla out here in Australia with me. Maybe she's bringing some good vibes, some good energy finally. But no, we I think I started playing a lot better once we, you know, after we were on that three-game losing streak. And we had to kind of bring it kind of close-knit again and get back to the basics and start refocusing on our goals.
Yeah, well, you guys are doing your thing. You're now in second place, right?
Yep.
In the ladder?
Yes, sir.
Soon to be in first. All right. Well, today our guest is Tino Malnati. Did I say your name right? Last name's right?
Tino Malnati. Yeah, pretty Malnati. Close.
Got it. How are you doing? How's everything going?
Doing well. Excited to be here.
You're at Oklahoma, right? Are you still there? Are you
still on campus? Or? Graduate assistant for University of Oklahoma men's basketball team. So amazing. We're currently preparing for round two of the NIT, St. Bonaventure on Sunday night.
Okay, exciting stuff. How has that been for you? What has that experience been like? Maybe take us through how you even ended up at Oklahoma, because you went to Northwestern, mm-hmm. played on the team there. So maybe start with what brought you to Oklahoma?
So actually, my dad has been a basketball coach growing up my whole life. He's always been around the game. Wound up getting the opportunity to walk on to Northwestern, get into a great education, meet some decent guys like Vic Law and some better guys, but Vic was a good one. And just played there for 4 years. My dad was still a coach, and he was actually on the staff at Loyola Chicago for Coach Porter Mosier's first 2 years. Right. And I wanted to get into coaching. So I knew Coach Mosier pretty well. I knew another assistant at that just took the job at Oklahoma, Matt Gordon. And it just so happened one of the assistant coaches at Northwestern wound up leaving for Oklahoma when Coach Mosier got the job. And that's how I got here.
Amazing. Take us through what that means exactly, being like a graduate assistant coach.
Yeah, so it's an entry-level job if you want to become a college or pro coach. Doesn't really – it's just you want to get into coaching, and it's a lot of hours. You're doing a lot of the dirty work that no one really else wants to do. And you're also in school at the same time. So it's a big commitment, but you're getting a lot of player development experience, a lot of video experience, a lot of on the court game coaching experience. But you just got to put in the hours if that's what you want to do to become a college coach these days.
Was there any period where it kind of hit you that you were no longer, because you're still on the court, right? Now you're a coach, you're no longer a player. Was there a moment where it was kind of like a weird transition for you where you were like, oh, I'm not even in the lineup. There's no shot in hell I'm going in a game today. I'm just sitting my ass on this bench.
During the games, not so much, but preparing for the games, preparing for road trips is when it really hits you, because you're the one loading, packing bags on the bus, looking after everything, making sure everyone's at the team meal, and just doing a bunch of stuff that just takes some time. And when you're a player, you just show up to the bus, get on the road, and everything's everything's made for you. Everything's ready to go. And now you're the ones making sure everything's ready to go. So that's a bit of a change.
Hmm. Tino, can you give like the listeners kind of a realistic view of what the process looks like in becoming a coach? You know, I think a lot of people think, you know, maybe they play and then they can get on the staff, when really it's not like that. You know, a lot of people have to go through being a GA, going through being like a video coordinator type of role, and finally becoming a coach. So in your perfect world, can you take us through the process of what it looks like for Tino Malnati to become the next big coach?
Yeah, well, obviously, if you have a good college or pro career, that definitely helps, just because you build connections and people know who you are and you get a little bit of a head start. But if you don't have that, you really got to utilize your connections to hopefully like get into a graduate assistant position, because there are a lot of people with basketball experience, without basketball experience, that want to be basketball coaches. And getting your foot in the door is really difficult. So once you get your foot in the door, you got to take advantage of it and just work super hard. But to get where I want to go, you got to, the big thing with, especially with college, is that you got to meet people. You got to have good connections, because that's really what it's all about. Just leveraging connections. What was your main question, Vic? I think I kind of ran off track a bit.
What's the process look like? Like, yeah, after you process. Become a GA, okay. Like what's yeah. the process going on?
So you got to do a good job. So year one, year two, finish your graduate assistantship, and then hope you did a good enough job to where one of the assistant coaches you work with or one of the former coaches that you've had in the past will give you a position somewhere else and leverage those connections. And then once you take a step up, so another step up for me would be a video coordinator, which you help learn scouting reports, help with more with recruiting, putting recruiting videos together, and just keep building relationships. Because to be a college coach, you got to be able to recruit players, and recruit players, you got to have relationships, and you can't leverage those relationships, you'll never be able to make it to where you want to go.
And my second question would be, you know, you've had the pleasure of playing under Coach Collins, but now being a little bit closer to the coaching staff, you're kind of working for Porter Moser, who has definitely established himself as one of the better coaches in the country, obviously taking Loyola to the tournament, Final Four, and getting their culture to where it is. Can you kind of give us an insight in like what Porter's coaching style is like and how you kind of view him as a coach, but some of the things you can take away?
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's amazing. When he watches practice, we'll go up and down one or two times and he'll stop it and talk about the 10 things he saw. While I'm looking, seeing two teaching points, he sees 10, and he specifically mentions each of them. His attention to detail is extraordinary. If you are one step away from the right spot, he'll tell you to be in that one step away from that right, get in that right spot, because all the details matter. And I don't know if you're familiar with this, but at Loyola, their saying was created by culture. When they went to the Final Four, they were wearing shirts that said created by culture. And they have a culture wall with a bunch of different terms. So coach, yep. He likes having these terms that are a couple words, a little phrase, and they mean something so much more. I can show you guys a picture if you're interested.
Yeah, definitely.
But such as never be three in a row, six eyes, six arms, a bunch of different words. You look at it, you have no idea what it's saying, but it means something, and all the players know what it means. So now from created by culture at Loyola, in our film room at Oklahoma, it's creating our culture with a big Jordan insignia on it. And the wall's still there. In our practice gym, we just did some renovations. And if you look around, you see every single saying on the wall. And all those sayings build up to what makes his coaching style so great and what he believes. And all those little things, that's why when you watch a Loyola team or last year, and hopefully our team at Oklahoma this year, as we're trying to establish our culture, you see all these little things that they do super, super well, which makes them such a great team.
I think that's really fascinating. And I think to that point, right, what you're talking about is a coach who clearly has developed his coaching style. He understands, you know, what he's looking for, but also how to communicate on a really high level, where it boils down to some key phrases, but those key phrases create this culture that everyone buys into and creates moments like Loyola Chicago making a run, or, you know, building that at Oklahoma for the future. I'm very curious what your thoughts are maybe on, you know, your early stages as a coach, but are there things that you think you could be your specialty, you know, going forward, things that you find, maybe you've noticed in yourself as you've been out there and learning just bits and pieces and nuggets. Are there things that you kind of find in yourself? Like, oh, I think I'll be a really good defensive coach. Like, I think that's the angle for me, or maybe more on offense. Or is there anything that's sticking out to you as of now that you think you have like an interest in and could be the thing that ultimately sets you apart?
Yeah. Well, with Coach Mosier, like at Loyola, they had the best transition defense last year in its history. For points per possession, they gave up the fewest in history. And then they had a top 10 defensive team last year. And he teaches so many little things and so many key teaching points, where I'm going to have a head start with my defense and my defensive philosophy. And also going back to Northwestern, one of our assistants, Billy Donlin, who Vic was under, he was super, super intelligent and how to read things defensively and key teaching points. So I think defense is definitely going to be where I'll have a head start. Offensively, there's a lot to learn. And it also depends on the type of players you have. But you take away stuff from Coach Collins. Like, Coach Collins is such a competitive dude. He had so many set plays that help us get good looks. But the main thing that I've learned is that to be a great coach, you got to be yourself. Like, Coach Collins mm-hmm. was that competitive dude. Coach Mosier is another competitive dude. But they got, like, there's key differences in being true to yourself and who you are. Cause if you try to be someone you're not, the players aren't going to respond. So you got to find ways to connect with them on a daily basis by them buying into who you are as a person before you get into that coaching philosophy, in my opinion, at least.
Yeah. I think Vic can kind of, you know, you both played college basketball. I think Vic can speak to that probably, you know, better than anyone, mm-hmm. having been recruited by college coaches, having, you know, you test people out, you're looking for their character. You want to understand who you're about to be with for the next 4 years, hopefully. So I do think there's an extreme importance there. I don't know, Vic, if anything sticks out to you when he brings that up, but I feel like very important.
No, I think Tino is definitely right. I think in terms of, you know, I don't really want to become a coach, but I think if I did, I would be pretty successful. I don't know, some of the things that I've learned and just all the coaches I've played for. I feel like building a certain chemistry and relationship with your players allows you to, you know, foster a culture a little bit better. You know, once your players can really respect you and trust, like, in what you're doing and who you are, I think they'll, you know, I just think that in life, that's just, you know, how people work better. But speaking of defense, though, going back to Loyola Chicago, they just lost Ohio State. 54-41, an absolute barn burner of a defensive game. You want to talk about a defensive game? That was far and away the lowest scoring game in the tournament so far. And I know Coach Valentine had those boys over there playing, you know, that pack line defense, not letting anything get to the basket. So it's funny that you said defense and how culture kind of translates over, because I know Loyola is definitely still, you know, keeping up with their fundamentals. And when I would go and watch practice, it definitely seemed like defense was their staple. When I kind of think about you, Tino, I feel as though when you become a coach, I feel as though you'll be more of an offensive guy, but maybe you can tell me something different.
Well, my team will definitely have to run their stuff correctly and be a high intelligent, high IQ team. Yeah. But I just feel like defense is where I've learned the most. I've had the most coaching expertise through defense. Because offense, there's so many things you can do and they all kind of work. Defense, it's kind of it's the same idea based on your personnel. But you have some things, no matter the personnel, like that could definitely work, in my opinion. Right. So that's why I got to go with the defense. They're going to win games.
So I think that's an interesting transition point. And I want to bring up the tournament because we're right in the middle of March Madness and we're on the second day. And it's just chaos. Every year it's chaos. You know, a 2 loses to a 15. They're nailed.
Well, hold on, Jake. Before you even get to that chaos, we got to talk about the chaos. Oklahoma didn't even freaking make it.
Oh, crazy. True. True.
You're talking about chaos. Oklahoma didn't sneak in.
Yeah, what happened? Take us through what happened.
So we were throughout the year, we were looking pretty good. And then we hit a rough patch when we got to the Big 12 play, just because the conference is so deep. I think we lost 12 of 14. And then we were just on the outskirts looking at the picture. heading into our last three games of conference. Wound up winning those three games of conference. We were still on the outside looking in, headed into the Big 12 tournament, and we were matched up with Baylor. So in our heads, we thought, okay, if we get Baylor, maybe we can squeak into the tournament. Wind up beating Baylor in the Big 12 tournament, huge win. But according to Lenardi and the experts, we were still like the first or second team out. And then we played Texas Tech the next day. And Texas Tech, like Baylor and Texas Tech, those are two of the best teams in the country.
Yeah.
I mean, Baylor's a one seed, Texas Tech's down a three seed. And we get down to the last possession and lose at the last second to Texas Tech. If we won that game, we would have made it. Obviously, some games earlier in the season you can point to. But
still tough.
Then the NCAA does its selection Sunday, and it says we're the second team out. And it's just
– Did you guys have a viewing party for that?
Yeah, so we had we got our guys – not a party. Wouldn't say it a party. Everyone got together. They gathered. We had food for them. But it was just tough because – I mean, you know, as a player, like you only get so many chances. When you're a coach, you get a lot more. So it might not hit the same way, but when you're a player and you're watching that, all your dreams and just so you put so much hard work into it, and you feel like you deserve it because all KenPom, the NCAA has its own rank metric called the net, and we were top four. We were 30 in the KenPom and 40 in the net. And you see these teams like Rutgers that was 77 in both get in over you. And then these Mountain West conferences that get in over you and they go 0-4 in the tournament. And you're like, what the heck? Like we play Baylor, Texas Tech, Kansas, Iowa State, so many tough teams have such a tough schedule. What do you want us to do? We're going to have some losses because we play a tough schedule. So that was tough. But now on the NAT, the only way to show the selection committee they made the wrong decision is you want to win it, right?
Yeah.
So that's their mindset. Hopefully we get the Madison Square Garden cut down the nets, but
we're hoping.
No, that's tough. And I think you're onto something there. I think it is tough that part of it is like conference. Obviously, you know, certain teams get in just by winning their conference. And you look at some of these teams that obviously it's exciting because you have these Cinderella stories, but it's tough for, you know, in Oklahoma, right? Like you're talking about a team that's in a conference that's very deep. And you got to fight every night. And even if you are maybe a better team than a lot of these teams, you still don't get that chance. And I'm curious from a coaching perspective, and I know, again, you're new to this part and you have some experience as a player. How do you explain some of these games where, like, you'll have a, you know, Duke and Cal State Fullerton are playing right now. Duke's up 10 points. And I'm not knocking the caliber of players on Cal State Fullerton, but – the fact that that's even a game is kind of remarkable, right? Like in a sense, what would you say are some of those things that, you know, in general, that once you're in a March Madness tournament, it's all about matchups. It's all about style of play. It, you know, anything can really happen. What are some of those things that you kind of think can contribute to a team, you know, having a Cinderella upset?
I mean, I think especially over the last couple of years, like people are getting so good in basketball, like these low major teams that were once getting smacked in like the 1-16, 2-15 games. Like the St. Peter's team had some kids who were hitting some crazy shots. Those dudes are still some ridiculous basketball players. And the talent level is just getting to a point where anyone could beat anyone. But then also the pressure that comes along with it is definitely plays a part, the momentum. And then kids are just playing their hearts out and, it's March. You never know what can happen. It's been like that. It's wild. I don't know how to explain it.
Yeah.
Well, I think another big reason though is the maybe not the one seed, right? Like maybe not the, but the anywhere from like the even the two as we just saw, but anywhere from like the three to the six, those are like good high major schools. But the teams they're getting matched up with are always like very very good mid majors. Like they're not like just teams that are bad, right? And I think people get confused because they see the school names and like, oh, you know, they can't be good. But then if you look at their body, like the season that they've had, this team is like either all seniors or they're only lost four games. They won their, you know, regular season championship. Then they won their tournament, you know, the conference championship. And it's just like, you're not playing a bad team. You're playing a team that's very good. That's very solid in what they do. And if you don't come ready to play, this is the exact team you don't want to play.
Yeah.
Like, and we all know it. Like in a you know, non-conference, you play these teams that are very, very good. Maybe they don't have like a lot of notoriety behind their names, but they're very good in what they do. They've historically been good. And then you come up against these teams, especially in the tournament when it's 0-0 and, you know, anything goes. And, you know, I just think some of these schools are just looking past and looking to like Sweet 16 or whatever. And you really got to take it one game at a time, especially when you get in these tournament situations.
So I think that that's interesting. So going back to your guys' experience and Vic, and, you know, you have talked about this before, but once you get in, what is that initial mindset? You know, is it really like, because Northwestern is an underdog. No one had Northwestern making a tournament, let alone winning a game or anything like that. Being competitive is not in people's minds unless they're Northwestern fans and believe in the school and have school spirit. Mm-hmm. What is that like amongst a team that's been together, worked hard, finally getting that opportunity? What are you really like feeling in that moment before you head into that tournament when you're matched up with a juggernaut or someone you're not supposed to play?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm sure Chino can talk about it too, but, you know, especially for Northwestern being that first time getting in, it was definitely a surreal feeling. But I felt like our group had, we just felt like we deserved to be there. Like, I don't think we were like surprised or shocked at any point to be like, we're a tournament team. I think we knew we were very good. And then getting into the tournament, like we, for lack of a better term, like licking our chops, like play these teams. Cause we thought like, yo, we're very good. You know, like we are, can't wait to show on a national stage, like how good we think we actually are. You know, that year we went to the Big Ten semifinals, we beat Maryland, who, you know, was a favorite. Like, we were beating very good teams and then getting in. It's just funny how the tournament worked that year for us. Like, we beat Vanderbilt on, like, a last-second, like, foul play. And no one ever really talks about that because of the Gonzaga game. Then you win that game, right, and that's awesome because that's the first win in school history. And then you play a team like Gonzaga, and, like, I think it's just, like, everything goes out the window because you're, like, look, like, we're playing with house money. No one expects us to win. Like, no one really gave us credit to be here. And we're like, we want to come out and like knock these guys back because, you know, you can only imagine they don't really know what to expect. And in the tournament, you only get like a day to prepare anyway. So you're not really like scouting teams. Like, you kind of just got to go out there and play. And it's whoever's better that day, to be honest. You know, it was a close game against Gonzaga, but, you know, I was super excited and like motivated during every game for tournament.
Yeah. And off of Vic's point, for some of these smaller schools that go and they win their tournament, like when you go through that much success, it kind of galvanizes the group when you head into the tournament. So you guys, our Northwestern team, we were fortunate to be super tight knit through pretty much the whole year. Yeah. So there wasn't that same type of galvanization. But when you win that tournament, everyone's together, celebrating, happy. You just feel like you can beat anybody. So when you hear your name gets called, the group's so together that you go out there, you play 40 minutes of basketball and anything can really happen. And also to Vic's point, the first 20 minutes of that Gonzaga game, we weren't thinking we can win. The last 20 minutes, things changed a little bit.
For sure. They came out pretty hot on us first half.
Yeah, we were a little bit scared and knocked back the first half, but then we got Vic Law the ball, shooting some trays.
I think it's just so fascinating, the mental aspect of the game, right? Like what you guys are talking about is finding that motivation, right? That inner motivation and trusting that, riding that into a tournament where anything can happen, but not just saying that, but like fully believing it and then performing. Because there are a lot of people that make it to the tournament that might have everything we're talking about. They might have the talent. They might have the close-knit team. They might have the coaching, but then they get to the tournament and it hits them, right? It's too big or whatever happens, or the team is outperforming them. But I just think that mental aspect, what you guys are talking about, is really, really fascinating. And I don't know if there's a moment for you guys that you can think back on where you go back to it and think, man, when that happened, we knew, like, no matter what happened that season, our team, Northwestern, is different. Like, this team is ready for any moment. We really can do anything. Like, was there a specific moment that kind of sticks out when you guys think back to that run?
I think when we beat Texas, to be honest, in the Barclays Center, and then had that super close game against Notre Dame, you know, RIP my man Nate Chapman. We're not going to talk about that turnover in the championship game, but we had some games, like some really good teams, and like some honestly some really big like failures that like made us so close. Yeah, like that just made us so close, right? Like we like we're in the game. We either beat a really good team, or we're like right in the game with them, and then something just mind blowing happens at the end, like Indiana. You know, it's just funny like how it worked. We had these, you know, these failures that just brought us even tighter together. But for me, I think it's when we beat Texas, like blew Texas out in the Legends Classic or whatever.
Yeah, completely agree. That was like the first ranked win. We blew them out by like 20. Yeah. Wasn't even close. Everyone started believing.
That's exciting. I mean, I think that what you just said also is one of my favorite things. I think you learn more from your failures than success a lot of times, and not being afraid to fail, but also having the ability to fail and reflect and grow and use that going forward. I think that's big, especially in basketball. Yeah. Like one of my favorite Phil Jackson quotes is, I think he said, let's not lose two in a row. And it had nothing to do with the actual outcome of the second game, but it was after a loss, how you respond mentally is even more important than what just happened. And I think that is when you really learn and really find yourself, in a special moment, like the one that we're talking about when you guys found, got it all together and made it to the tournament for the first time in school's history. But I want to take this to the tournament now and maybe go through some of our picks. I know you guys have brackets. Is there anything from the first round that like you just got completely wrong or stunned you?
Without a doubt, St. Peter's.
St. Peter's?
St. Peter's beating Kentucky. I know a lot of people at Kentucky in the Final Four or whatnot, but Kentucky has some of the best transfers in college basketball. They have 23-year-olds, 24-year-olds playing, and they're the best at what they do. And they just, St. Peter's came out and just made shots and just beat them. Like that's just crazy. As a 15 seed, beat some pros, some top talent in the country. Crazy.
Well, I wasn't really expecting much out of Kentucky anyway, but I had Iowa in the Elite Eight. So, for them to be as hot as they were in the Big Ten tournament and absolutely wallop Northwestern and then come out and lose that first game was ridiculous to me. I had Iowa as my if I went Purdue as I had the two teams holding it down for the Big Ten in the tournament this year.
Going back to what you said, Tino, about Kentucky, do you think that has anything? Because I think everyone talks about Kentucky being the one and done. You know, that's the one and done program. They just pump out.
That's changed now, though.
It has for sure. But do you think there's anything about that might have contributed in any way to that? Or that just is a full out St. Peter's just showed up unafraid, came together and, surprised everybody?
Well, part of they have one and dones, and they also have transfers, which may, like Vic was talking about, the togetherness of a team. When you have one-year guys, maybe that the togetherness of the team isn't the same. And St. Peter's, I'm not sure about the roster, but I believe they had been there for a few years. Guys developed together. And you can deal with adversity a little bit differently. Because when you watch the game, Kentucky just went one-on-one, and guys are just throwing up shots, trying to do it themselves. So maybe that plays a part of it. But, Texas today, they have a bunch of transfers. They wound up winning their game. So I don't really know. I can't tell you right now. Maybe a couple more years after the transfer portal, there's more data to reflect on. But definitely could have.
Now, who do you guys have winning the tournament? What are your picks? And who are they playing? And what's the score? Make your prediction here.
Hold on, I got it. Well, my Final Four teams are Tennessee, Arizona, Gonzaga, and Purdue. Let me look at right. I can't believe Illinois is losing to Chattanooga right now, though.
I have Chattanooga, so I'm praying. I'm praying. Because if I hit that, if I do that, I might win my bracket this year.
How far do you have Chattanooga going?
Just this round, but I'm like in a close battle right now, and I think I'm the only one that has that, which will give me a huge bump. Because everybody else already, their total points are way lower than mine. So if I get that, and the other picks fall the same way for everybody, I think that'll be big for me.
If Chattanooga wins this game, so many Illinois fans, I want to hear the end of it on Twitter. It will be ridiculous.
Yeah.
It will. Is this their – nah, they made tournament bio there. They lost Loyola, right?
Last year, they won their first game as the one seed after winning the Big Ten championship and got curb stomped by Loyola.
I have a couple things that I will know about my bracket. I have Michigan. I had Michigan winning. Where are they?
You think Michigan's going to beat Tennessee?
I have Michigan beating Tennessee, which is just probably not going to happen. But I went with it. I went with it. Okay. I was feeling it. Look, Juwan Howard's back as the coach. They're all feeling it. They're, you know, maybe they pull something out. The other one I don't feel good about is UCLA. I'm a UCLA fan. My dad screams at the TV. He even turned it off last night because it was so horrible. And I had to tell him they won.
Oh, yeah. They almost lost to Akron.
I don't feel good about them at all. They put almost lost to Akron.
Mary's is good. Well, St. Mary's is good. They play St. Mary's next. St. Mary's
is good. I don't feel good about them at all. They look kind of sluggish and lazy. That's the other one I'm kind of worried about. And I have them going pretty far. I think I have them in my Elite Eight. And then my final four is Gonzaga, Purdue, Villanova, and Auburn. Now, let me just say this. I have no idea what I'm talking about when it comes to college basketball. So It could work. It could not work at all. And then Gonzaga plays Villanova for the championship, and Gonzaga wins 68-62.
All right.
You have Gonzaga actually winning a championship this year.
I do. I do this year, yes. Okay. I know that that's like the favorite, but –
What makes you think this is the year? They're the favorite every year.
I know. Whenever I watch Timmy, though, I watched him play the game yesterday. He was unstoppable. I watched him have 24 points or whatever it was in the second half, and he just looked so easy. They had two guys on him. They're trying to double him. He just couldn't stop him. And then the freshman, whatever, Chet Holmgren, That guy doesn't make sense.
He's killing. He killed just, the last game.
He had eight blocks or so. He had, 17, 18, and eight? I don't know. I haven't seen that in a while. So I just feel like – and they have some returning guys who've been there. I kind of feel like they're a safe pick.
So with my bracket, my big trends is that I'm very anti-Big Ten and very pro-Big 12. Might be a little biased.
There's only five Big 12 teams in there, too.
I got four of them in the Sweet 16. They're all going. But my final four, I got the Zags – Purdue, Arizona, and then Kansas, and have Gonzaga beat Arizona. The Tommy Lloyd last year coached for Gonzaga, and now he's taken over Arizona. So a little head coaching matchup between him and Few. 83-87, a high scoring affair.
Tina, me and you almost have the exact same final four. You just have, I don't know, I have Tennessee in there. And Kansas, I forget who you have.
Kansas?
Yeah, you have Kansas. I have Tennessee.
Yeah, you got to get a Big 12 team in there.
Did you guys watch San Francisco play?
Yes, that game was
amazing. That game was crazy. Who was the guy? How you say his name? Bouye?
Yeah, he had 36, right?
He was hitting some incredible shots. That game was fun. I love March Madness. It's the best thing.
It's time to be alive, man.
It's the time to be alive. It's chaos.
I'm actually going to say something funny.
Yeah.
I remember early in my college career when we weren't good. We were still struggling, still coming up.
Yeah.
Some of the best time of the year was St. Patty's Day in Chicago, where you can go down to the bars and watch the games and enjoy all the festivities. Bar none, some of the best moments of my life right there. But so, nothing compares to when we actually were good.
Yeah,
we were playing.
It's important to say that.
Instead of end of last year. I'd much rather take playing than be in the bars, but good consolation, being in the bars.
Glad you cleared that up. Nick, in Australia, is there any March Madness? Do people care at all, even know what's going on?
Yeah, so a lot of my teammates went to college. Yeah. I have some St. Mary's guys that went to college, went to St. Mary's on my team. And a lot of them, make brackets and, watch the games pretty closely. But as, a country, I don't really think, it's that big. AFL, which is Australian football, just started this past weekend. So I think that is taking a lot of precedent, but they still show the games here and there. You go to a bar and one of the games might be on, but it's definitely not as big as it is in America. Gotcha. But the fact that it's even on randomly on some TVs here is pretty impressive.
Okay.
Vic, you want to ask him our famous question?
Oh man.
No, you know what? No. I'm going to switch it up. Chino, what was your favorite win this year? Did you guys beat Texas?
Favorite win this year? No, we lost to Texas at the buzzer once.
Hold on. Did you play? Please tell me you played the little GA game. And did Jordan also play?
Okay, I got a story for you. So, friend of the program, Ben Skronik, was in the Super Bowl, right?
Oh, yeah. You were there.
So I got lucky enough to take a flight to go to the game. I got back from the game at about 10 o'clock p.m. My flight got back. I get a text from my manager saying, "Hey, we're playing Texas," because we played them the next day at 11 p.m. Straight off the flight, you know, wasn't in a great headspace. It was a long night the night before celebrating the victory. Go straight, straight to the gym, and sure enough, Jordan Nash is running the show for Texas. Calling out plays, yelling at his guys. You know Jordan, strong voice, yelling at his guys, making sure everyone's in check. And they beat us, but I had a plus minus. I wasn't there for the first 10 minutes of the game. So my 30 minutes was a positive plus minus. So I think we basically won.
Did you outscore Jordan?
Jordan didn't really shoot, so I think I did. He was more of a facilitator.
There you go. We'll take it. You may have lost the war, but you might have won the battle.
That's good. That's exactly right. No, but shout out Jordan. Big win today for Texas.
No, it was. Who do they have next?
Purdue, I think.
I got Purdue rolling. I got Purdue in the final. Matt Painter getting those boys ready.
He's going to rely a lot on Jordan for that Big Ten scout.
Yeah.
You know, appreciate you, man. Good luck with the rest of the NIT. We're pulling for you. At least I am. I can't speak for Vic, but I imagine he is. Okay, so we're both pulling for you. Appreciate you taking the time to do this and hope to have you back soon.
Awesome. Appreciate
you. Thanks,
all right. Take care.
Peace.
This podcast is presented by Bristol Studio, sound editing by Rashad Allen, music by James Grissom.